Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for mid-May 2023. At the time we're recording, the carbon dioxide level, the global carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere is 424.45 parts per million, which is almost 75 parts per million above the 350 that scientists tell us we need to be at. So we got some work to do to pull that carbon dioxide level down. On top of that, there's only 2,435 days left until the year 2030, by which time we have to cut our carbon dioxide emissions. So there's plenty of work to be done. One of the ways we can think about doing that work is to, I think the old phrase is divide and conquer, or so sort of eat the elephant one slice at a time. And how do we approach reducing our carbon dioxide emissions? What are good mental models to think about how to address this? One of them is to talk about something that at first seems kind of difficult to grasp, but it is a very useful way to think about things. It's called, in particular, so just to set the stage, what we want to talk about is carbon dioxide that is emitted from buildings. Again, there's a whole vocabulary. There's the built environment, the building sector. We have buildings in downtown Boston. Thankfully, most of us live in homes, right? So there's all kinds of buildings that humans inhabit. It turns out there's carbon dioxide associated with that. And usually we think of the carbon dioxide from a house comes from burning natural gas to keep it warm and cooking our food. But it turns out that there is carbon dioxide that is emitted in just sort of making a house. And that goes under the word, the title embodied carbon, which sounds kind of like a zombie thing or maybe disembodied carbon or some kind of terrible, but embodied carbon refers to the idea that you end up emitting carbon in order to make the stuff that you build a house from or you build a building from, right? There's carbon dioxide emissions there. And that's a good way to think about how would you reduce that? How would you make your whole house cleaner? So embodied carbon is a tricky topic, and that is why we are blessed to have with us today the Better Buildings Campaign Director from the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, who's been working on this problem for a while now and is going to explain where we are. Her name is Miranda DeOlio. Miranda, welcome to the Climate Minute. How are you doing?
I'm so well. Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting.
It's great to have you here. So I gave that rambling introduction as to what embodied carbon is. Can you tell me, how do you think about embodied carbon? How should people listening to the show, what is embodied carbon, right? Tell me.
Yeah, so the scientific definition, embodied carbon is the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the manufacturing, transportation, insulation, maintenance, and disposal of building materials within that building. But the way I look at it, it's the embodied carbon, which is like the carbon in the walls, the carbons that we don't create living in our buildings, but the very large amount of emissions that are released from the creation of said building and the disposal of the building. And so it's more along the lines of the what we don't do when we live in our building, but is what's done before and after.
Interesting. So it's the carbon in the walls. That's it. Have you patented that phrase? Have you trademarked that one yet? That's a good question.
Not yet, but it is the elephant in the room in many climate sectors. And so that's the best way for me to kind of understand. It's like we are creating carbon, burning fossil fuels when we plug something in or turn something on, but that's in the walls itself, but also the materials within the walls as well.
Can you give me an example? And I think I've got one in my head. I always think of cement, but tell me, is cement an example of embodied carbon? And how does that work? I mean, what goes on there?
Yeah, so cement can be an example of embodied carbon when we look at its environment product declaration. It's EPD, so what actually goes into the said material and how the emissions taken to create that material and emit over time. And so from material sourcing to factory creation to disposal, we can look at the ready mix, as they call it in the manufacturing world, of cement, So yes, it definitely can be an example.
And it's my understanding that many people, the foundation of your building is made out of cement, or sometimes called Portland concrete, and the Portland concrete, in order to put all that stuff together and get it ready to add the water at your, right, because the big truck rolls up and all this, I mean, in order to get that stuff, which looks kind of like sand, right, the cement powder, there's a rather large amount of carbon dioxide that is emitted just as you mix those things together, in Portland, where they make the Portland cement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the carbon dioxide emissions are happening, at the creation of the cement powder, right?
Of course, yeah. There's different ways to measure and limit and hopefully reduce those emissions moving forward. But that in that creation, a lot of embodied carbon or carbon emissions are released.
Right. So that's interesting. That's once, and I suppose there are others in terms of, when you chop down wood, if you chop down a forest, right, you're releasing carbon dioxide. Would you say the transportation of, you got to think about carrying all that cement across the country, right?
Yeah, the heavy loads and the distance that it takes. You include the transportation, and then you include the maintenance, and then the installation itself, the people that are working on it, and the emissions that are released during that. So there's different tracking systems and a lot to wrap your head around.
You said kind of a word, a vocabulary word that flashed. Is it environmental declaration?
What was the word? Environmental product declaration, known as an EPD.
And tell me, what is that, and how should people? Of course, most people are probably not going to bump into such a thing, right? Because most people are not in the contracting business. But there are these documents. Tell me, what does that document represent?
Yeah, so there are really different components into measuring embodied carbon. So there's the whole life cycle analysis of WLCA and EPDs. And these are different ways to quantify and like analytically measure embodied carbon from cradle to barrel is what they are calling it. We're looking at the life cycle analysis of a material of said process. Mm-hmm. And so an EPT, it just quantifies the environmental impact of the material or product over the lifetime of the use of the product.
And if you go back to the cement example, that somehow the carbon dioxide that is emitted in the manufacture of the cement is somehow captured in this environmental
product declaration. Right? Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. And then you said another, this is what's interesting is there's a whole lot of vocabulary words, right?
There is.
You said life cycle analysis, an LCA. I mean, how do people think about a life cycle analysis of a building, blah, blah, blah? Tell me.
Yeah. So it's the systematic analysis of the potential of environmental impacts of the products or the service or the building material during the entire life cycle. So looking from the manufacturing, looking at the emissions from what we call the cradle, from the very beginning, mm-hmm. and then to the grave and to the disposal of the materials. So at every step of the way, measuring its EPD, it's another fun term, global warming potential, GWP, in order to compare the global warming impacts of the different gases of the carbon dioxide in the construction of these materials.
And it's interesting you mentioned that the when you say life cycle, then you have to include the destruction and the tear down of a building at the end of its life, right?
Yeah.
And what stuff's, because now you have a bunch of stuff that's probably emitting carbon dioxide as you tear it down, and you got a bunch of junk you got to deal with, right?
Then
you got to put that old broken up concrete somewhere, huh?
Yeah. And where does it go? And what are we doing with it? Why aren't we reusing it? Why are we not looking at its life cycle and identifying if we can reuse it and walk away from anti-demolition, really try to save the embodied carbon to reduce the more emissions that we release from the carbon in our walls.
Wow. And so just to rewind, I'm trying to keep up here. This embodied carbon is distinct from the carbon dioxide. And of course, when we say carbon here, we mean carbon dioxide, global warming gases. It's just a buzzword.
Yes.
But the embodied carbon is distinct from the carbon dioxide that comes from the operation of the home.
Yeah. Right?
And those are just two different concepts and different ways to think about things.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like as a home buyer, it's so much easier to focus on reducing the emissions you're creating while you operate your building. Mm-hmm. But then when you think about what we can do at the municipal and statewide level when it comes to the construction of our buildings and the demolition of our buildings, there's that set of carbon that we can focus on.
And do you have a number for how big this embodied carbon emission, how much of the total carbon dioxide that we emit? I mean, how do you think about that?
Yeah, so currently embodied carbon accounts for 11 to 25% of our global annual emissions. It's a very large amount. It's a quarter of our annual global emissions. And so I understand the idea that it's so abstract and so hard to understand, but it's also so important to see that these unaddressed emissions need to be started to be addressed and needs to be prioritized. And there's structures in place in order to do that.
Ah, so you said so that's the magic word. What can be done? So we've got this idea that the construction of new buildings has a carbon footprint even before you start heating it, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're thinking about that. What stuff's in play to address this issue? Once you've identified it, now you can start to think about what to do about it, right?
Exactly. And so there's many different practices and ways to reduce embodied carbon. And I think right now, as you can tell, there's a lot of education literacy that needs to be done around embodied carbon. So the first thing first is measuring. How are we going to measure our embodied carbon in our buildings? And that can be done at the municipal level and the statewide level. So there can be measurements through zoning policies and climate action plans, or at the building code level. And then there's also moving towards reduction and setting benchmarks and limits on how much of EPD can go to for said concrete or said building material. Mm-hmm. And then potentially hoping moving us towards anti-demolition and reuse structures that can reduce the embodied carbon and lead us towards a renovation future instead of completely demolishing a building.
You started out, let me tell you a story. You are at from my perspective, the program you are thinking about here goes all the way back to the year like 2000, because when climate groups began to form in towns in the years 2000, 2001, the first thing they did was to go off to the Department of Public Works and start to measure how many electric light bulbs they had, what the energy, and they begin by measuring. Right. Mm-hmm. And once you begin, then you can see now as we go forward. Now, once you have something to measure, you can begin to try and address it. I think that what you're saying is right now we're at the stage where we're just beginning to kind of open our eyes and blink and say, oh, my God, and we need to begin to measure this. So tell me more. Are there programs? I mean, how would a city, if they wanted to, begin to assess the embodied carbon? I guess it's all in the new buildings, right? I mean, mostly it has to do with new buildings.
Currently, yeah, it is at the new building stage, because right now, as a city, you can only set like zoning policies or a climate action plan that looks at like 20,000 square feet bigger for a building and say, you know, this is the amount of carbon content that can be in said material. And then really then getting towards the reduction throughout the years, making that number a little bit smaller. But the state also can pass procurement policies. And so this procurement policy would allow for said materials to set EPDs, set requirements of state projects of how much embodied carbon can be in the material, and really move us towards building a whole new economy of like reduced embodied carbon concrete, reduced embodied carbon wood structures, and really move us towards this holistically decarbonizing our built environment.
So I come out of a technical background, and I know that at places that I used to work, there was something called a material safety data sheet, an MSDS, which described the chemical hazard of anything that you brought into the building, right? You had to have an MSDS. Mm-hmm. And I think by law, the supplier was required to have this document that you could go look up. The environmental product declaration, the EPD, is that mm-hmm. required by law, or is that voluntary now? And could the state require such a thing if you want to build something in Massachusetts?
Yeah. So currently there's two bills sitting in the Massachusetts legislature that could require state projects to enforce EPDs. to enforce a certain embodied carbon content in materials of buildings. And so having the same sheet as you speak of being like, this is the amount of embodied carbon is in this material, and this is what I have to build with. And so there are currently two bills that focus on this procurement bill, and this is done nationally. There's other states that have done this, Colorado, California, and it's proven to be feasible and effective in reducing embodied carbon.
Wow. So Massachusetts has to start catching up, right? Yeah. We don't want to be behind the curve, right?
No, we do not. And for my work, at least in equitable building decarbonization, we are leaders in this space. And this is something we can move on urgently. And I know we could build this economy.
Now, tell me this. This then becomes interesting. Suppose I'm the state of Massachusetts were to say, after some, you know, from this date forward, you will provide the EPD, the Environmental Product Declaration, right? Would there be a limit on how much carbon there is allowed? So that if you come up with an EPD that shows too much carbon dioxide, you could not use that product? Is that the idea, to sort of restrict the product that could be used to build your building?
Yeah, so this is the ones that are currently sitting have to do with state projects. So so state buildings currently. But this would just enforce that type of law to make the procurement, and those are the only materials that you can use have to meet these EPD levels.
And that, I think that's fascinating, because this whole thing rewinds to, not that I'm hung up on cement, but I mean the cement example is very difficult to avoid all those carbon emissions, right? Mm-hmm. And so at some level, the state can, I mean, for the moment, the state, I don't know if they have to accept the carbon dioxide levels of the cement, because there's not many other ways around it. Although I saw there is a Massachusetts startup that has ways to manufacture the carbon dioxide, manufacture the concrete without emitting CO2. That presents a business opportunity, right? Makes it attractive for the concrete manufacturers to address the issue, right?
Yeah, and that's all it is. It's the transition of our work, the transition of our manufacturing and our economy. And this is only going to lead to green jobs and a better transition, and really forcing the workforce to become, you know, that clean energy future that we need to. We have these mandated laws, and how are we going to make it?
That's fascinating. And so tell me the other side of the coin, which I think is also, so we talked about, I mean, this is great stuff, the embodied carbon life cycle analysis. So you're thinking about just the building itself, and now you get to the end state where you're going to thinking of tearing the building down. I mean, I grew up in New Bedford, where there's lots of mills. And all those mills have been, not all of them, but many of them are repurposed into much more modern business centers. Is that an advantage of thinking about embodied carbon, or I mean, somehow making it advantageous to reuse the buildings that exist?
Right? Yeah. And so the third bill that currently sits in the legislature builds a statewide advisory board, and they would look at such things, to look at anti-demolition and saying, what are the incentives that we can give to give the best practices to move us towards renovations instead of full demolition of buildings? And so that is a really beneficial way to reduce our embodied carbon, because like you said, our buildings are being transformed. They're either, we're building up no matter what. We shouldn't be, you know, like, but we're going to continue to build. And so how we continue to build is going to be very important in matters of embodied carbon.
Interesting. So you've said that there are several bills wandering around the state house looking for support. And, these are, of course, this is fairly arcane stuff, right? I mean, it is important. I guess the question is there any moves in individual towns at the town level as opposed to the state level to begin the conversation?
Yeah, of course. So Cambridge, Newton, Boston, they have all gone about it a different way on how they could address embodied carbon. Really? So one has a zoning policy ordinance to reduce embodied carbon. One has a climate action plan to set benchmarks. And so they are all kind of trying to address this in some type of way within the municipal level, which is actually, they're doing more. They've already had these plans. They're already going forward with it and passing it or talking to their select boards than the state is. And so I local action is where the action is. This is where we move forward in most of our climate work. And so there are municipalities that are doing this.
I mean, that's super cool in the sense that you're saying that the initial, embodied carbon has been thought of for a long time, but we're starting to address it. And we have different towns taking different approaches and different ways to think about it. And that's sort of the laboratory of democracy, right? And that's where what I love about MCAN is that MCAN works with encourages this kind of experimentation to figure out what's the best way to go forward, right?
Yeah, and that's what we did with net zero buildings. No one was talking about net zero buildings. The opt-in code came out. We were pushing for an all-electric code, and now we have to be a leader in embodied carbon. We're ready to take this on, be experimental, take something that someone else might not be prioritizing, but we must in order to really get to our climate targets.
Well, that's interesting. So, dear listener, the net zero building code. So this everything gets interesting as you get into the start understanding the words. There are building codes that specify how you will build a building. And there's something called net zero building code, which is an aggressive code to make sure that correct me if I'm wrong, the operation of the building is clean, right? So it calls for renewable energy. It calls for induction stoves, all kinds of good stuff, insulation. But that net zero building code, this is the Department of Environmental Resources, I think. Let me just say they studiously avoided the question of embodied carbon, right? They danced around it and did not include that. They knew about it, but they did not include that in the building code, right? Mm-hmm. So how would a town then, if you wanted to talk about embodied carbon as part of a building code, essentially you are requiring these environmental product declarations sort of limits as to how much carbon can be represented by those pieces of paper, right, to guarantee the material. Is that the idea?
Yeah. And it's setting benchmarks of it's the same way that the energy code does, setting benchmarks on attacking larger buildings that have the cost budget and the feasibility to reduce their embodied carbon because they are so large. Mm-hmm. And so it would make more sense. And in that one, two, residential homes, it's a difficult space in the building world. And so the energy code, the specialized opt-in energy code, it focuses on our energy use. And so the beauty of a zoning policy, it supersedes a building code because at the municipal level. And so.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I missed. So you're distinguishing building codes from zoning. So in the zoning space, and let me say what I think it is. So zoning talks about what kind of buildings you can put on a particular lot, right? Is it a commercial building? Is it a home? Is it a parking lot? I mean, it controls that. The building code determines the specifics of how how many outlets are in every room, kind of thing. All right, so tell me, how does the zoning interact with embodied carbon?
Yeah, so the zoning code allows for said benchmarks to be put in place for the what is being built on said zone. I guess it's the best way to explain it. And so it's more of a benchmark setting than the energy code is more of a requirement in some type of way.
So, I mean, if something is zoned commercial, for example, you see that on signs all the time, you can also be zoned to have only certain kinds of carbon, embodied carbon, in anything you build there, right? That's a decision the zoning board can make.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, and all of this information you can find on your town website. These zoning policies have to be shared. And so it's pretty easy to access and to understand different, but but to definitely see where embodied carbon can be included in your zoning policies. There's multiple resources that you can go into, the Carbon Leadership Forum has a wonderful municipality policy resource that folks can look at and to share with their municipal officials to be like, hey, this is how you can incorporate embodied carbon into our zoning policies and action plans. Because there are policies that are already being used and leaders in this space that we can begin to replicate statewide.
Interesting. And I'm sure you would say that you would be happy to talk to anybody from a town in Massachusetts that had an idea that wanted on the Mass Climate Action website, there must be a place people can go to learn more about this, because there's so many different avenues, right? And there's so many different contexts that this sort of plays out in, that everybody gets to, it's like a playground, right? Where do people go?
Yeah, so definitely. We have a webpage, on our webpage, we have our embodied carbon toolkit, as I had the wonderful opportunity to cultivate. And so this is looking both at statewide action that can be taken to reach out to your legislators to co-sponsor the three bills that currently sit in the Massachusetts legislature, and then also resources to share with your municipal officials for them to begin looking at embodied carbon and ways that they can reduce their emissions in our built environment through their plans.
Wow. How cool is that? I mean, this is kind of a new frontier I keep talking about, as you well know, Massachusetts has a roadmap for how we're going to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions, and it covers a lot of ground, right? There's all kinds of topics in there. I keep thinking of the sort of the plucky little state wandering down this roadmap, not confused, but, you know, challenges along the way. This is a tool that embodied carbon is a way to think about how Massachusetts can move forward to achieve its climate goals. And it's kind of poetic, right? But I mean, in that sense, this is one more way that as we go down the roadmap, this is something we have in our toolkit to address the emissions that raises a question. Do you know if in the Massachusetts roadmap, do we already count embodied carbon as part of our carbon dioxide emissions? Or are we all just thinking about how many cars are on Route 128?
So I'm not exactly sure, from my understanding, if they account for embodied carbon within their emissions accounting. But I know that they have a segment in the roadmap called Leading by Example, and it's through DOER. And they are trying to look at best practices to reduce embodied carbon. This is something they want to do. Mm-hmm. There's interest in this, and because there's an understanding that it needs to be done. But it is also understanding that this is the beginning, and that there's an education and literacy that needs to come with it. And so it's in the leading by example portion, as I call it.
So that's then the other interesting question is, a lot of what we've spoken about is for new buildings, because that's, and in fact, I think what you're saying is new big buildings in downtown, right? You know, big high rise kind of stuff. Is there a discussion about the embodied carbon in retrofitting? So, a few years, we're probably going to be talking about embodied carbon in residences, right? Because that's the direction everything's going. Mm-hmm. How do you think about reducing the embodied carbon in doing, say, a deep energy retrofit? Is that fair?
Yeah. So I believe Logan had the wonderful opportunity to talk about Zero Carbon Renovation Fund on the podcast. And one of the caveats in the Zero Carbon Renovation Fund is deep energy retrofits would use low embodied carbon materials. So addressing it in that way and moving it towards, as we've been talking about, anti-demolition, instead of looking at a building and being like, let's start from scratch. What materials can be used in this building and be reused and repurposed is the best way to look at deep energy retrofits and addressing embodied carbon that way.
Wow.
That's the beauty of my work. It all is connected in some type of way.
Well, isn't it true? Everything is connected to everything else, and it's it all matters. All right, so let's see. What's the parting thing that you would want to tell the listener as we, there's this new concept, right? New vocabulary words, embodied carbon, life cycle analysis, environmental product declarations. These are words you will hear in the future. What would you tell people in summary?
Yeah, in summary, this stuff is technical. This stuff isn't for everyone to understand, but this stuff is important. Embodied carbon is something we need to address in order to make our buildings from climate polluters to climate protectors. And so besides just meeting our emissions, reducing embodied carbon affects health, it affects equity, and it affects economics. There's a way to transform our lives and our buildings so that these frontline communities are impacted, workforce is growing, and that we are protecting the planet that we live on. And that is the one message from what I do in my job that I want people to take away, is that everything is, there's an intersection between it all, and we need to start protecting our lives, our communities, and our planet.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, what we will do is we will put on the show page the MCAN links to some of the stuff we talked about, the specifics of the bills. I mean, the toolkit, I'm sure, contains all the specifics about what bill, who's the sponsor, who you can talk to, all that kind of, what you can say, right? There's all kinds of good stuff there. We'll put up links to that on the show page for this episode, which will be at massclimateaction.org. And if you're unfamiliar, you go to that massclimateaction.org. Across the top, there's a banner that says newsletter and more. You pull that down, then there's blog and podcast, and then you finally get into the back corner and you're there and you can get all these links, okay? If you have questions or comments, of course, I think in the toolkit page, you'll be able to get in touch with Miranda, right?
Yep.
But if you want to get in touch with the show, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about, okay? You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their smartphones using their favorite modern podcast distribution app and rank us. When you're at the MCAN website, massclimateaction.org, wander over to the donate page and, as they say, smash that donate button. Right? Let people, there's a lot of good work going on there. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support and sending us good ideas week after week. We want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Miranda, thank you so much for coming on and helping us learn new vocabulary words and get our heads around this very, very confusing topic.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.